Good afternoon.
Yes.
It is a beautiful day. Nice fallish day. Beautiful. And to those of you who are at home, hope you can join us again soon. My wife is down in Ellendale. She might be watching. I told her to take her Kindle services, and about this time they would be starting potluck, but she can go off to a corner and watch the webcast on her Kindle. I've been doing a chronological series on the heresy that was battled in the New Testament. The last installment was on the letters of Peter and Jude, which were written in the late 60s. And that brings us up then in the Bible, in the New Testament, to the 80s and the writings of John. When I say the heresy in the New Testament, I say it that way intentionally because, as you know, my contention has been from the beginning of this series that the heresy in Corinth, the heresy in Galatia, the heresy in the province of Asia, all had the characteristics of Gnosticism. And my point today about John's letters, and it's just a sermonette, so it's got to be short, but just on John's letters, is that they are a continuation of that fight against the same heresy. The opponent does not change. The three epistles of John, which we'll turn to here momentarily, were written to the same churches to which Paul and Peter wrote back in the late 60s. They are, of course, tied to the book of Revelation, which is by John, which you know, of course, was written from the island of Patmos near Asia Minor, off the coast. And he writes in Revelation to the seven churches of Asia, which all were Paul's churches, or at least they were spin-offs of the church at Ephesus, which Paul established. John moved to Asia sometime certainly after the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD. And John is reported to have lived to an old age, so I'm thinking the common wisdom is that these letters were probably written in the 80s, maybe even the 90s, but probably in the 80s. But the point is, John is writing certainly to Paul's churches, whose heresies we've looked at in the past. Only this is now 15 to 20 years after the death of Paul and Peter. These three letters are written in Greek, of course, and their very presence, I think, the very presence of these three letters, as small as they are, especially 2nd, 3rd John, as small as they are, their presence in the canon of the New Testament is a witness, I think, to the fact that they were sent to Paul's churches. And therefore, they were in the archives of Paul's churches, which became the New Testament, were canonized. That is, the apostolic letters that were saved by those churches became the New Testament. And here in the 80s, in the letters of John, the enemy is obvious. John is writing against Gnosticism. This is the well-known, this is no secret, I mean, no big revelation. You look at any common biblical reference from Barnes to Halley's Bible Handbook, and it will tell you such. And by the 80s, the opponent in Asia probably even is known by name. History has it, early church writers have it, that John was a contemporary of a Gnostic preacher by the name of Cerinthus, with a C, Cerinthus, who taught in Ephesus. So I don't think I have to convince anyone that the enemy in John's letters is Gnosticism. But I'd like to highlight a few things in these letters, characteristics that I think we've seen before. Number one, their behavior is bad. Their behavior is bad. 1:6. I'm in 1 John now. 1:6. If we say that we have fellowship with him and walk in darkness, we lie and do not the truth. No. He's pretty blunt. They just lie. If their behavior is bad and they say they're in the light, they lie. There's a contest in the churches over who walks in the light and who walks in the darkness. In 3:10, I'll just refer you to 3:10, in this the children of God are manifest, and the children of the devil. Which side are you on? Whosoever does not righteousness is not of God. It's simple. You look at their behavior, and if it's not righteous, they're not of God. Gnosticism is so named because it claims to be intimately, spiritually acquainted with God. You know, they speak of their spirituality, but their behavior is bad. And it's the same bad behavior, I think, that we have seen in Paul's churches, in the battles, the letters we looked at earlier, in Corinth, for example, in the 50s. We see a resultant indifference to idolatrous worship, meat sacrificed to idols, for example, and even to the incestuous relationship that was in the church at Corinth. To the Philippians, back in the 60s AD, Paul warned of their behavior in 3:2. I won't turn there, just, you know, quote you a lot of snippets here from Paul's writings. Philippians 3:2 says, "Beware of dogs, beware of evil workers. Evil workers, beware of concision." Their behavior was bad. And around the same time he wrote to Ephesus in the early 60s, he wrote, "It's a shame even to speak of those things that are done in them by them in secret." That's Ephesians 5:12. And so on. Through the mid and late 60s, he writes to Titus and Timothy. To Titus, he says, "In works they deny him, being abominable and disobedient." And to Timothy, he writes, "Shun profane and vain babbling, for they will increase unto more ungodliness." Their behavior is just bad. Just as it was bad in the 80s, it was bad 30 years earlier. Second, number two, they oppose the laws of God. It kind of overlaps with the first point. But specifically, they oppose the laws of God. They are antinomian. It was a tenet of Gnosticism that the true God was a much higher power than the Creator God. Sounds strange to us, but that's what they believed. And that the laws of the Creator are simply there to entrap and to enslave us. I think it's ironic that they seem to derive rituals from the laws of the Old Testament, but ironically they reject the weightier matters of the law, the real moral matters of the law. And again, it's against this opposition that Paul writes in 2:4, 1 John 2:4, "He that says, I know him, and keeps not his commandments," and that's what the Gnostics would say, "I know God intimately. I am acquainted with him." John says, "and keeps not his commandments, it's a liar, and the truth is not in him." He's being blunt for that very reason. Or in 5:3, John writes, "This is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not grievous," you know, as the opposition would say they are. And my point here is that this is the same lawlessness that we see 30 years earlier and all along the letters of Paul. For example, in Romans, I think Paul is writing Romans thinking about the controversy, the heretics in Galatia, and he writes to the Romans, "You that make your boast of the law, through breaking the law, do you dishonor God?" You know, the Gnostics honored certain aspects of the laws, but they were antinomian. He writes to the Galatians, "For neither they themselves," speaking of his opponents, "who are circumcised keep the law." These people who advocate circumcision as a ritual do not keep the law. They are antinomian. And this is 30 years before the letters of John. This is in the mid-50s in Galatians. Okay, that's it for that point. Yeah, number three. Number three, they cause division. They cause division in the church. It's, I think, a matter of jealousy. In 2:9, back in 1 John, 2:9, "He that says he is in the light and hates his brother is in the darkness even until now." And 4:20, "If a man say, I love God, and hates his brother, he is a liar." He keeps calling these people, calling a spade, doesn't he? He's pretty blunt. This is just a lie. And I think it is not apparent, but the division problem comes from a conceited super-spirituality. Gnosticism is super-spiritual. I think they are disparaging Christians who didn't share their spiritual signs, their mystical experiences, like speaking in tongues. They are insulting these spiritually poor Christians, who they're claiming are spiritually poor, and regarding them as second-class Christians. And this, I think, is what John is referring to when he says that they hate their brother. And these are the same divisions that we've seen Paul fighting in these same churches decades earlier. For example, to Galatians in 5:15, Paul wrote, "If you bite and devour one another, take heed that you be not consumed of one another." They were criticizing one another. They were judging each other. Some calling the others second-class citizens, second-class Christians. In 5:26 in Galatians, he says, "Let us not be desirous of vainglory, provoking one another, envying one another." The envy was over these spiritual gifts, supposed spiritual gifts. That was number three. Number four, false brethren. They are, the opponents of Paul, of John here, are false brethren. The heretics are inside the church, and they claim to be a part of the church. But they're basing their doctrines on a very different creation myth. John writes in 2:19, "They went out from us, but they were not of us. For if they had been of us, they would no doubt have continued with us. But they went out, that they might be manifest that they were not all of us." These are very, very interesting words to me because they sound so much like James's words from 30 years earlier, 35 years earlier in Acts 15, where James had said, "We have heard that certain which went out from us have troubled you with words subverting your souls, to whom we gave no such commandment." That was way back before, that was at the Jerusalem Conference, 49 AD. It seems to me that Luke has recorded this just to trace the origins of this problem back that far. John seems to be tracing their origin back to the point where they went out from us, but they were not of us. It's the same false brethren that Paul is writing about in Galatians 2, verses 1 and 4, where Paul refers to them this way. He says, "Then 14 years after, I went up again to Jerusalem," speaking of the conference, "with Barnabas, and that because of false brethren unawares crept in." They are false brethren, and they were for 35 years. Number five, they deceive the church. They are deceivers. 2:18, John writes in 2:18, "It is the last time. And as you have heard that Antichrist shall come, even now are there many Antichrists, whereby we know it is the last time." And he says in 3:1, "Beloved, believe not every spirit, but try the spirits." And you know, who had the right spirit was the controversy. Which side was really spiritual? "Try the spirits whether they are of God, because many false prophets are gone out into the world, and they're in Paul's churches." It's the same deception that Paul warned of in the 50s. Paul wrote to the Galatians in 1:6, "You are so soon removed unto another gospel, which is not another, but there be some that trouble you and would pervert the gospel of Christ." To Timothy, he wrote in the 60s, "Timothy, keep that which is committed to your trust. Avoid profane and vain babblings and oppositions of knowledge, gnosis, falsely so called, which some professing have erred concerning the faith." And he writes to Peter writes, to the same churches, 2 Peter 2:1, "But there were also false prophets among the people, even as there will be false teachers among you who will secretly bring in destructive heresies, even denying the Lord who bought them." This was 20 years earlier, maybe. Well, denying the Lord who bought them, which kind of leads into my last point, number six. They deny that Jesus Christ was a man, and that he died as a sacrifice. They denied he was a man. And John, of course, confronts this directly in 2:22. John, 1 John 2:22. "Who is a liar?" Favorite word again, seemingly, right? "Who is a liar but he that denies that Jesus is the Christ?" He is Antichrist that denies the Father and the Son. You know, they would preach Christ, but they would deny that Jesus, the man, was the Christ. 2 John verse 7, "For many deceivers are entered into the world who confess not that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh. This is a deceiver and an antichrist. And this is classic Gnosticism. You know, this is why it's obvious to commentators that John is battling the Gnostics. To them, the Christ could not have been a man. And if he could not have been a man, then he could not have died. The Christ didn't die. And it's against this idea that John writes things like 4:10, in 1 John 4:10. Herein is love, not that we love God, but he loved us and sent his Son to be a propitiation for our sins, a sacrifice, which the Gnostics could not accept. It was impossible from their point of view. And this denial of Jesus Christ as being a human and as a sacrifice was a point of contention for 30 years. Back in the 50s, Paul wrote this to the Galatians, "O foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you that you should not obey the truth before whose eyes Jesus Christ has been evidently set forth, crucified among you?" He was a sacrifice. He was killed. Or he wrote to the Ephesians in the 60s, "You who sometimes were afar off are made near by the blood of Christ," and so on. There are, of course, many, many references to the blood and the sacrifice of Christ. This is because the opposition denied that he was a sacrifice. So these are all six characteristics of Gnosticism, and this is well known by practically anybody, commentaries, that is, about the letters of John. But consider what we have in these three little letters. We have letters to the same churches as Paul had written to, the same churches that Peter had written to, and about the same heresy. If the heresy was definitely Gnosticism in the 80s, and it almost surely was in the end of the 60s when he writes 2 Peter, well, when Peter writes 2 Peter and when Paul writes 2 Timothy, quite obviously also to Gnosticism, then I see no reason to believe that there was anything other than the same heresy in the early 60s in Colossians and Ephesians. And the same all the way back to the 50s in Corinthians and in Galatians. And if the heresy is Gnosticism, then it has to be heavily weighed in whenever you consider the arguments of Paul, of the Apostle Paul. If Paul is saying anything that is hard to be understood, then he's probably dealing with a problem that we don't understand fully, or not, we don't understand it fully enough. But I think as we do fully understand the problems that Paul and Peter and John were dealing with, the problems in Paul's epistles will melt away.